Canto 3, Chapter 33. And the text number. So the context here, this is the end of a long section of Srimad Bhagavatam dealing with Lord Kapiladeva. It starts in chapter 20, this is 33, that's 14 chapters. It's very significant portion of Srimad Bhagavatam. And so the beginning of this chapter, this is text 28, so the beginning of the chapter 33 finds Devahuti acknowledging that her question has been answered. Her question goes back to chapter 25. In chapter 25, Kardama Muni, her dear husband, who she has been with for tens of thousands of years and faithful service, has now gone. Gone because he was following Dharma. He was already a perfectly realized soul that didn't need to follow anything. But he was following the Dharma of one who takes the Vanaprastha stage of life. So he went to the Vana, he went to the forest to meditate on Vishnu, who was his son. You know, it's puzzling. Why did he go to the forest to meditate on Vishnu when Vishnu, and he knew it, was his son, because he's setting an example. Detachment in that vanaprastha of life. So, in the absence of her beloved husband, she's now in the care of her son, and her son is Lord Kapila. And so she places this question before Lord Kapila, how to become free from undue attachment to the temporary, specifically family life. But family life is part of the temporary. And she says that attachment is disturbing her mind, and in that disturbed state of mind her intelligence is not clear, and she's in Maya, in her own words. And this Maya, she's acknowledging, is your potency. You've placed it there, you've covered me with your Maya, so can you please remove it? And so he removes it. He removes it not by touching with a magic wand or just going hocus pocus and it's gone. It's by sound vibration, instructing her, the fit recipient of instruction and the fit broadcaster of instruction, and details and details and details and details, and then he's done. So chapter 33 begins with Devahuti acknowledging that you've answered my question. My illusion is now gone, similar to Arjuna's words. My illusion is now gone, just by sound vibration and receiving it properly. and a number of verses where she's praising Lord Kapila as Lord Vishnu, the supreme, the source of everything, most merciful. And, you know, her realizations of the process of bhakti that he has given to her, the process of meditation that's a component of bhakti that he has given her. And after she finishes her wonderful prayers of glorification, Kapila speaks just two verses. And he says, I've answered your questions, and now you're protected, provided you follow the instructions, and now I'm going to depart. And he departs. So then the rest is describing what Devahuti does, which he feels, her consciousness, the inner workings of her consciousness. And in the steps of progress to achieve the stage of perfection. No, she's already at the stage of perfection. She has the personality God had as her son, and because of her qualification. Nonetheless, we're getting a slow motion picture of perfection, moving towards perfection. What goes on when one is at that stage of devotional service? There's activities of the body, there's activities of the mind, activities of identified. Just in summary, with the body, she reduces body functions. She reduces eating, she reduces sleeping, she reduces her involvement in the temporary. On the behavior side, the external side, she's surrounded by opulence. That the where this is taking place is this amazing vimana, and there's details and details describing the opulence of this vimana, surpassing the opulence of heaven. The demigods are envious of Devahuti's opulence. That's beyond their reach of opulence, and she has attendants who are with ornaments and fine garments and, you know, appropriate for the place. And Devahuti doesn't. It's not an artificial detachment or some kind of stoicism. It's just she understands that's part of the instruction that she's been given, and she's doing, and happily, as she did when she was with Kardava Muni. Because remember, way back, Devahuti is the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, who's the emperor of the universe. And she's a princess with fabulous opulence. By choice, she went into the forest to become the wife of Kardava Muni and lived in great simplicity, austerity, happy. Because of the relationship with her dear husband, who was like that too. She was of quality like her good husband. So it wasn't an inconvenience, it was a happy time. And then from that opulence came opulence again. By his mystic power, he created this, not just a plane, but a city that flew. Kardava had a lot of qualifications, including amazing mystic power, effortlessly. So then she lived in opulence. And now, again, it's going the other direction. And she's contented in all circumstances, is part of the point. Opulence, austerity, She wasn't happy in one situation and unhappy in the other situation. She was progressively detached from the situation, and the other side, the internal part, is progressively fixing her mind on her son. And then the verses describe, she then focused her mind on Lord Vishnu. Of course, her son is Lord Vishnu, but the form of Lord Vishnu, as was instructed. And one of the features of it's really nice instruction, like really, really clear, slow motion clear. But the Prabhupada makes a comment in one paragraph, previous verse 26, that her fixing of her mind was comparable to the Ashtanga stage of Dhyan, just as chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita is Dhyan Yoga. And Dhyan, Prabhupada writes, is number 7. Dharana, Dhyan, Samadhi. So it speaks, the word is Samadhi, but she was Dhyan, her mind was fixed. It wasn't Chala, it was Nishchala or Achala, non-moving, upon the personality of Godhead. And then Prabhupada says, this is stage number 3 in the bhakti process. Vishnu Smaranam, Shravanam Kirtanam, the fruit of which is Vishnu Smaranam. So Vishnu Smaranam can be, you know, preliminary. It can be the unripe mango or the ripe mango, or even just, you know, the mango seed. But she's at the ripe mango stage, Samadhi stage. And again in 26, long purport, two effects in that condition. Her affinity for matter was gone. Even it says she forgot her body. And Prabhupada explains what that means. And great transcendental bliss was just what she was experiencing. So she wasn't a bliss seeker, she wasn't an averse to temporary. She was doing something else. Neither one of those two. Those are byproducts, not goals. Her meditation was not achieve this or stay away from that. She wasn't a liberationist and she wasn't a bliss seeker. She was attached to the personality of Godhead in devotion. And then the next verse, just before this one, is she forgot her body. And again, the explanation of what does that mean? She didn't become the absent-minded professor. She didn't become oblivious to where she was and where am I? Not that. She was aware, but not identifying with. So, now this morning, her body was being taken care of by the spiritual damsels created by her husband Kardama, and since she had no mental anxiety at that time, her body did not become thin. She appeared just like a fire surrounded by smoke. Purport, because she was always in trance, in transcendental bliss, the thought of the personality of God, it was always carefully fixed in her mind. She did not become thin, for she was taken care of by the celestial maid servants created by her husband. It is said, according to the Ayurvedic medical science, that if one is free from anxieties, he generally becomes fat. Devahuti, being situated in Krishna consciousness, had no mental anxieties, and therefore her body did not become thin. It doesn't say she became fat. It is customary in the renounced order of life that one should not take any service from a servant or maid, but Devahuti was being served by the celestial maid servants. This may appear to be against the spiritual concept of life, but just as fire is still beautiful, even when surrounded by smoke, she looked completely pure, although it seemed that she was living in a luxurious way. The detail of that apparently luxurious way isn't described. It's more, at least the description from prior verses, it's she had one cloth, she slept on the floor, she wasn't, you know, in luxurious condition. Around her was luxurious condition, and she was not averse to it nor attached to it. There's a very nice verse spoken by Krishna to Uddhava in Uddhava Gita that says a good eligibility for bhakti, a candidate for bhakti, is one who is neither too much attached nor too much detached. The too much attached is the materialist. And the too much detached is the impersonalist. Give it up. Why? Because it's a source of misery, so give it up. And I don't want misery, so give it up. But bhakti isn't too much in either direction. There's a willingness to accept necessity for service to Krishna. The operative principle is service to Krishna. So accept what's needed for service to Krishna and not other things. It's neither this side, that side. It's fertile ground for the seed of bhakti to grow. Now, it's certainly possible that someone is extremely attached or in something impersonal in tendency to receive the seed of bhakti and have it grow. And that a lot of that depends upon the association and the willingness of the person to even consider. Mainly through that association, through sadhu sangha. Text 29. Because she was always absorbed in the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she was not aware that her hair was sometimes loosened or her garments were disarrayed. Purport. In this verse, the word Daiva Guptam, quote, protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very significant. Once one surrenders unto the service of the Supreme Lord, the Lord takes charge of the maintenance of the devotee's body, and there's no need of anxiety for its protection. It is said in the second chapter of the second canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, that a fully surrendered soul has no anxiety about the maintenance of his body. The Supreme Lord takes care of the maintenance of innumerable species of bodies. Therefore, one who is fully engaged in his service will not go unprotected by the Supreme Lord. Devahuti was naturally unmindful of the protection of her body, which was being taken care of by the Supreme Person. So mystery solved. One of the mysteries is, you know, for some people, There's a number of mysteries, but Kardama Muni left his beloved wife. Beloved wife, you mean, from both sides. Beloved wife, very tens of thousands of years faithfully serving. And in that case, it does describe her body became very thin. And her hair, which previously was cared for very nicely, became matted, like a tapasvi in the forest. But she, you know, was not worried about that. She was protected. And then he left. So, you know, how could he leave? And what was she to feel? She felt some feeling to leave. She expresses that to her son. And she had an understanding, intuitively, that her son would also leave. And then her son left. So, wait a minute. How could her son leave, leaving his mother unprotected? That's a social no-no, right? He's setting an example. He left. But she was feeling protected. How was she protected? She had everything that she needed externally and internally. Her mind and the source of everything, her consciousness, was fully protected. She wasn't feeling unprotected. She was feeling separation. But that separation she was feeling was a transcendental feeling of separation, not the other kind. Oh, I miss my son. The language is there in these verses that, like a cow, when her calf dies, the cow cries. But that's the worldly comparison to something that's not worldly. Her affection or attachment was transcendental. So they may look the same, but they're not the same. Transcendental attachment and feelings of separation are like the difference between day and night. Darkness and illumination. She was feeling the illumination kind. Transcendental separation. And that helped to intensify her focus of her mind upon her beloved son. And from that situation, she, following the instruction, because she was protected by the instructions. Well, the instructions were the right instructions, and her receptivity of the instructions was of the right quality also. And so she was protected. Spiritually and materially, she was protected. And now we're hearing she's protected by the personality of Godhead, even in terms of the maintenance of her body. Now, supposing somebody isn't on such a platform. I mean, supposing. We're not on such a platform. So, what about our maintenance? And we're not going to be maintained if we're not on that platform. We'll be maintained in any circumstance because it's the same Father with so many children, unlimited living entities, and we're being maintained by Him also. We may be in Maya thinking, no, it's my work that's maintaining me. Where does the fruit of your work come from? Where does your ability to work come from? Where does the senses stick to the cinnamon? Where does everything come from? We're being maintained. Eko bahunam. Yo vididati kaman. Prabhupada would quote that so often from the Upanishads. There's one, Eka, who's maintaining the bahu, the many. And that's just the way it is. It's someone in Maya may think, no. I'm maintaining. I'm maintaining my family by my hard work. And the answer is, you're doing hard work, but the hard work isn't what's the cause of the maintenance. Some persons work very hard and they have next to nothing. And some persons hardly work. They have so much. Where's everything coming from? I keep thinking about, when I see these people, you know, homeless and hungry people, they work really hard. It's cold, you know, just saw one in Detroit. It was cold. He's bundled up and drinking his bottle of water and coming out with his, you know, homeless and hungry. Day and night. I guess it's a good job. Must pay well. Or I don't know. You know, right around the corner is a place that's advertising, you know, help wanted. You just go and get a job. He's got a job. He's working day and night. Anyway, who's maintaining us? I won't tell the anecdotal story, but a wealthy person is thinking, you receipts, parasites, you're living off of the labor of those who work hard. And where do you get your money? And the answer is, we get our money from the same place he does, from Krishna. And there's different positions of varna and ashram, not taking improper advantage of the circumstance, but rather serving Krishna this way, suited to one's nature, serving Krishna in that way, suited to one's nature. No one should be lazy. Anyway, Krishna is our maintainer. So Devahuti specifically is mentioned, she didn't become thin. It doesn't say what she was eating, how much. It does say earlier she was reducing, eating, sleeping. But she didn't become thin. Generally when you don't eat, you become thin. Generally eat a lot, you put on weight. She was not eating a lot and not becoming thin. She was being maintained. Prabhupada spoke about Raghunath Das Goswami. You know who is Raghunath Das Goswami? Yes? Raghunath Das Goswami, one of the six Goswamis in Vrindavan. He was one of his outstanding characteristics was incredibly renounced. Prabhupada used to like to speak about. He was from the Majumdar family, and during his lifetime, the Majumdar family was like the Birla family. You know, the wealthiest family, amongst the wealthiest family in all of India. And he was the only son. So he was due to inherit all of that gobs and gobs of wealth. They had no interest. No interest at all. And he left it all and went to be with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So his father, being anxious for his welfare, would send gold coins and servants to Puri. So he accepted the gold coins to feed the Vaishnavas, not for his comfortable living. That was what his father wanted. He wouldn't have any difficulty in living as a mendicant. And then he stopped. Mahaprabhu asked, why did he stop inviting us? What went wrong? He said, he was told by his servant, Raghunath doesn't feel it's right taking money from a materialist and using it to feed the Vaishnavas. And so he stopped taking the money. And now said, how does he get his meal? He gets his meal by standing with other mendicants at the gate of the Jagannath temple. At the end of the day, the brahmanas come out of the temple with their Jagannath prasad, and he accepts alms from the brahmanas of Jagannath prasad. Oh, very good. And then Mahaprabhu didn't see him outside the gate anymore. What happened? He said, Raghunath Das felt like a prostitute. Oh, will this one give me something? Will that one give me something? He gave something yesterday. Maybe I'll... Didn't feel that consciousness was right. So what does he do for his meals? He goes to the... There's a stall that after everything is distributed, it's for poor people. And at the stall, they give prasad to the poor people. Oh, very good. His renunciation was escalating. And then he stopped going to the stall. Why? Didn't feel it was right. So he goes to the place where after everything at the stall becomes rotten, it's discarded over by the side of the temple where there's cows. And what the cows won't eat because it's rotten, he gathers that, washes it, so that there's some hardcore, uncooked part of the rice inside, and that's his food. Oh, very good. So Mahaprabhu went to visit him and saw this little bag or whatever of rice and took a morsel. No, it's not fit for you. What do you mean? This is the most sumptuous prasad I've ever had. And then when Raghunath Das went to Vrindavan, it got more extreme. It got so extreme that he would only eat every other day, and what he would eat was a palm full of chash, just buttermilk, every other day. Yummy. That's it for 2 days. So Prabhupada explained his body was very thin. In fact, his body would tremble. So how was he maintaining himself? It wasn't from, because if you stop eating, you can't maintain yourself. His answer, he answered his own question, by spiritual energy. And he was fully active in so many ways. Offering so many obeisances to all the devotees, chanting so many rounds, circumambulating Govardhan Hill on a palm full of buttermilk every other day. No fuel in the tank. But he was being maintained. We can't imitate. I mean, we can imitate and we die. We should not imitate. But for persons of such phenomenal Krishna consciousness, Krishna maintains them, even they may not eat. So to the Krishna's maintenance isn't just you have bread and butter on the table and a few vegetables. So it's not, he just take care of those basic necessities and puts them on your table and you just go off somewhere. It may mean that in some cases. It may mean that. Sudama, Brahman, and so forth. He made no endeavor. There's others examples. But the sense of being maintained, these two, being maintained and being protected, of the six angas of surrender, one of these is angi, and the others are angas of the angi. This item of being maintained is angi. It encompasses the other. The others are certainly necessary, but they're limbs of the one. Krishna is my maintainer. Because otherwise your mind is somewhere else. You know, it goes into the temporary. We engage with the temporary. She was doing things and receiving service from servants and obviously some relationships. She wasn't, you know, impersonalist. Engaging with the world around her, but not identifying with it. Very high. We have like little of what was mentioning this the other day. Supposing you're so absorbed in something with joy or with intensity, and somebody walks into the room where you are. I've had this happen. You don't even know that they're in the room. And then they may say something, and you don't even hear them say something because you're so absorbed in what you're doing. It's not disregard, it's just absorption in what you're doing. Then they tap you on the shoulder, and it's startling. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to startle you, but, you know, it's something, whatever the message was. What to speak of being absorbed like that all the time, and absorbed with not just in a particular activity, but absorbed in samadhi, in thoughts of the personality of Godhead. That's the stage that Devahuti is in, and we're hearing some description of what that was like for her and those around her. Following the instructions of Kapila. I mean, she's dry wood, and just touch with fire and dry wood. Because thousands of years, tens of thousands of years with Kardama Muni, pure devotee of the Lord, she was dry wood. And she's ignited. And so this nice example of fire covered by smoke. There were things going on around her that may have looked to others that she's materially absorbed. She wasn't. So it's the stage of her devotion is very high, but it's nice to get a picture. And as I said, slow motion. And we'll see, maybe during the course of being here, we'll finish the chapter. Any discussion?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, when you were saying the balance between detachment and attachment, in that case, if the mind playing a game with you and trying to connect everything which is not even necessary connecting to Krishna, this is necessary, you know, we can use it for how maintaining our body. We can go extreme, going to the gym, going to there, and say that is important for us to maintain our body so that we can serve here. So how do I make a...
The question is important. What's the question? I got the scenario.
Yeah. So what if there is a difference in opinion, what to say between the devotees, or maybe husband and wife, about what is necessary?
I'm not going there. Between husband and wife, difference of opinion on this or whatever else it might be. A few things. One is uh, between husband and wife, be very clear what the goal is. So you can calibrate this or any other subject based on what the goal is. Make sure there's a shared goal. The purpose of our being together as husband and wife. And then the commitment following that is the commitment to the relationship that's pursuant to that goal. When that's there, it's easy to work these things out. And when that's not there, it's not easy to work these things out. When the commitment is there, then a practical consideration is sometimes the preference goes this way, sometimes the preference goes that way, sometimes he yields to her, sometimes she yields to him, and no one's keeping score. That's important. No one's keeping score. So many times. Now it's my turn. And then guidance from persons that are you both look up to as persons of wisdom. And the persons of wisdom are not meant to like decide. They're meant to help you make wise decisions. So specific to this particular thing, the individuals involved need to look inside themselves and say, in a broad sense, what's needed? And is it in excess or is it needed? And even if it's a little bit in excess, it's something that I feel I need. It could be, you know, the other one is a little bit insufficient. So then can be encouraged the one that's doing a little insufficient to do what's sufficient. And then the other one that's doing a little more than in excess, you know, you really need that. Not like, don't do it, but if, you know, look at the needs because we're clear what our goal is. And time is very valuable. As one advances in bhakti, it's one of the symptoms of bhava. Time is not wasted. It's not just time management. It's time is a very valuable to be used wisely and effectively in service to Krishna. Because there's so much I want to do to serve Krishna. And maintaining of the body with exercise or whatever else it is needed. And what's needed in order to reach the goal? Hari Sori explained something I didn't know, that after Prabhupada's two heart attacks, one that happened in New York, and then he went to the Jersey Shore, and the doctor said, you got to exercise. And that's when Prabhupada started, from that point forward is when he started his morning walks, at least that's what I was told. And he did it because was what the doctor recommended. And then later Prabhupada said it added another some number of years to my life. Well, thank God for the advice of the doctor to add some number of years to Prabhupada's life. And thank God that Prabhupada accepted that was coming from Krishna and he did it. So he was with us for several extra years. Now it took time. You know, 1 hour every morning. Every morning, even in the cold winter, or whatever was going on outside, and then early morning, it's cold, more cold than the early morning. Then, so he did it anyways. So we need to do something. You don't have to wait till we're, having heart attacks to do something. You can do something in principle, not just so I feel good, but for service to Krishna. So then when you have that principle, then it's easy to calibrate. Easier, at least. because there's so much to do for Krishna, and this is needed for service to Krishna, then you accept it. And if it's not needed, you don't. So, I thought the question is going to be not between husband and wife, but, you know, just within oneself, what's needed? And you, it may change from time to time also. There's that verse in Bhagavad Gita chapter 5. Atyahara prayasa cha. No. Chapter 6. Yuktahara vaharyas cha. One who is moderate or regulated in his habits of eating, sleeping, work, and recreation. The mind can be peaceful, and then so not too much, not too little, moderate and regulated, and then you just monitor over time, and you may calibrate little less, little more. Yes.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I have this tendency to hanker for the devotee association.
That's good.
Especially the personal association of spiritual master or the mentors who are guiding me. But there is a feeling that I want my Krishna consciousness to be better. I mean, increasing. I want to chant my rounds nicely. I want everything to go on nice. So that my day should be better. There is a motivation for my own things to happen seamlessly. How can I change that to service mode to the devotees?
By cultivation, following the example and the instructions of advanced devotees. We're conscious beings, and so naturally when we look out at the world, we're thinking from the seat of consciousness, the soul. And in spiritual progress, the well-being of the soul results in the well-being of the shadow of the soul, or the mind and body. And so, being eager for spiritual well-being naturally starts from us. And as one progresses, naturally it goes to, the bhakti principle goes to those Krishna and Krishna's dear devotees. And so the focus naturally, as bhakti advances, goes from ourselves to the object of devotion. So the mere fact that you're hankering in this way is the main impetus for getting there. That's bhakti. It's a concern of a bhakta, is Krishna should be at the center. Let Krishna become my all in all. It's a sort of cultivation like that. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilana. Anything else? Yes.
So, how do we maintain persistence, Maharaj?
How do we do what?
How do we maintain persistence in any practice?
Persistence in practice.
Yeah. So I a lot of times feel it's anyway a lot difficult, and when we face any difficulties, I'll not be able to maintain So I tend to give up.
Well, the determination to do so is how to, and the unsteadiness is a stage. Sometimes, sometimes not. The sine curve. So that's a feature of unsteadiness due to our conditioning and passage of time. Put the two together, we get unsteadiness. So your question is how to get steadiness. The steadiness is nishtha. It's a stage of bhakti. Before nishtha comes anishtata, unsteadiness. So the commitment to the process of purification is the means. We sadhana or bhajana kriya. Bhajana kriya aimed at faithfully accepting those things that will purify me, will clear the contaminations of heart that are the cause of this unsteadiness. It requires faith. Faith in the process, faith in the source of the process, Krishna and the representative of Krishna. This is going to take me to Krishna. It's going to take me to the better place. Not just steadiness, but beyond steadiness. It's going to take me there. So with faith, I take up the practice of steadiness, although I'm not steady. And cultivate it with commitment and faith. It's a really simple thing. Without commitment, nothing happens. Something's got to happen, but nothing that you're hankering for is going to happen. It takes commitment, even materially. So, commitment on the spiritual side. And then, so there's going to be ups and downs. You maintain the commitment anyways. And, you know, like the question over here, well, I'm committed because I want to be better. You know, the competitive. I'm comparing myself to others or something. That's not satisfying, nor is it sustainable. It's passion. But you know, that's a mode that we're influenced by, so we think those ways. But it's not going to produce steadiness. It may start steadiness, like dhruva. Passion, revenge. I want to get back. But steadiness doesn't come just from that. It comes from, you know, higher motivation. So we start with wherever we are, and we commitment.
Thank you.
Maharaj, this question is from Kasturi Manjuri Mataji. She's asking, how should I differentiate between the transcendental feelings of
separation? How should I differentiate?
Between the transcendental feelings of separation and material kind, especially in my neophyte state.
Especially?
In my neophyte state.
In my neophyte stage.
When the feeling is for separation from spiritual authorities.
When there's a feeling of separation from spiritual authorities. Well, it depends on the person and the circumstance. It's the question is broad. But one simple litmus test is my enthusiasm for service increasing or decreasing? Is my attraction for the temporary increasing or decreasing? And then, you know, it's material or spiritual. So, you know, introspect, and those that are close to you, you ask for their observation, their feedback. And it's a safe assumption that our present position is mixed. There's some of both, spiritual and material. So then we try to enhance the spiritual side and not engage with the material side, those feelings of separation. Looks like we're done. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Oh, I'm sorry. You had a question. Oh.
Hare Krishna.
We have to turn the power on. Okay, we're on.
Slow motion has some connection with the trance or spiritual state, as it was described for Devahuti. She was in a slow motion. Is that soul because of soul consciousness?
Could you understand? We didn't catch your question. Try it again. Prema Trungati, you got it? That's your question? Ah, no. it has to do this. The comment about slow motion is, it's the incremental step. It's the narrator. The narrator, Shukadev, which it's actually Maitreya, but huh? The narrator is speaking slowly, step by step. Step by step, the narrator is giving details and incremental steps, rather than like sometimes it's just, voila, but he became, you know, she went back to Godhead. It's my comment that it's the narrator is speaking the slow step by step, little by little, different features of it. From different angles of vision, that kind of slow motion. It's the narrator, not her. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.